Nat 28 is here, and you think of the instruments that they're going to be playing, flute, clarinet, and cello, as traditional conservative instruments associated with symphonies and concertos and other works that go back hundreds of years. They play new music from more modern composers, and they also play their instruments in ways that may be unfamiliar to you. And you'll have a chance to hear one selection from them, and then we'll talk afterwards about a concert that comes up 1 week from today, June 28th at 8 o'clock at St. Paul's Episcopal Church. And we also will perhaps demonstrate how they made some of the unique sounds. So join me now as we welcome Nat 28. Nat 28, I wanted to let that settle a little bit. That was a lot of fun. Let me turn to Zoe Sorrell, who is the group's founder. Can you tell us what you just played and a little bit about the composer?
Sure. So this is a piece called Above the Clouds Lies the Above the Clouds, lies the Promised Land. And it's by our resident composer, Jean-Patrick Bessengrand, who's a French-American composer who until very recently lived in Pittsburgh and works with our ensemble very frequently. And this piece was written in memory of our recently passed board vice president, Samuel Harbison.
What a lovely thing to do. For people unfamiliar with this whole concept of new music, can you sort of give us a grounder on or a grounding sense of what it all means?
So in most basic terms, contemporary classical music is classical music that's been being written today, where the composers are still living and frequently available to work with the musicians on the piece. So rather than just having a score, a piece of music in front of you as a conduit for what that composer's intentions were, you not only get to sort of decipher the music in front of you, but you also get to ask them, hey, what did you mean? What was your intention when you wrote this? What was the story behind this? I'm going to let Allison say a little bit about why, like, we love working with composers that are living.
Sure. Absolutely. Hello.
Hi.
So as Zoe was saying, something that is really special about playing music that is written now and in our lifetime is that the composers are still living. So personally, I find that you're able to have a lot more creativity with that, partly because, say, if you're playing a Mozart piece or a Brahms or something like that, that literally hundreds of people or more have recorded it and worked on it. You can go and play it for all these different teachers, and everybody will probably tell you you're doing part of it wrong and doing part of it right because that's their opinion of how it should be played. Whereas with new music, a lot of times you get to be kind of the one making those creative decisions. And what's really cool is, as Zoe said, the composer is usually pretty available. With Jean-Patrick, we work with him all the time. We can go and play this piece for him and say, What did you mean by doing this? You know, like, I think it should be this way, and Zoe thinks it should be this way, and the composer's right here. He can settle it. You know, you can't exactly call Mozart up and ask him what he really meant. You know, should we be phrasing it to this note or this note?
With Mozart, you just may be able to. You never know.
That's true.
It'd be fun to talk to him. Do you play the same way every time once you settle on a method, or is there some allowable improvisation?
So it depends very much on the piece and the style of the piece. And one thing that's really interesting about contemporary music is that improvisation is becoming more of one of the techniques that's employed is allowing the performer to have more creative say in the piece. And so I was just talking about this morning, is this is the third time this month that I've performed this piece, and it's been different people playing it with me every time. So it's been completely different experiences. This Bronwyn got this piece yesterday, so I want to commend how beautiful her cello playing was.
Look at you. Wow.
It was a challenge, definitely. But that's why I love playing new music, is that kind of there is no... Well, I don't say no wrong or right way. Obviously, there is a right way with what the composer intended, but you do get to be the first one to venture into that territory.
Well, you're blazing a trail, right?
Which
it just occurred to me. It's really analogous, right, to going on a walking path or walking down a sidewalk or, you know, a paved path in a forest or actually... You know, I wonder if this tree should be the one where we turn, or mm-hmm. how should we do this? And that's got to be really cool because you have no idea where you might exactly end up, right? And you get some hints from the composer or some collaborative efforts.
Right. And as Zoe mentioned, like, she's played this piece with two other different people in my place. And so I guess I could have called them up in the yesterday to see how they approached it, but that wasn't that likely to to hear back in that short amount of time. So it was something where I just had to sit down and plan out, and then just make music on the one rehearsal.
That's amazing. That wasn't this morning, was it?
Yes.
Yeah. You sounded terrific. That's about the hardest hitting question I'll ask, but you sounded great. I know in a minute we'll talk about some of the specific sounds the instruments musicians are making with their instruments.
Right.
And we'll also talk about details on a concert 1 week from tonight. But I would also just like to know, and I know people listening would too, a little bit about each of your backgrounds, where you were raised, how you came to love music, and just a little bit about your life. And Bronwyn, why don't we start with you,
okay,
since I think this is your first time here?
Yes, this is my first time on the Saturday Light Brigade. I come from the San Francisco Bay Area, a town called Livermore. I started playing cello when I was 6 years old. I think it's something my mom had always wanted to do and never took the chance. So I think she kind of pushed it my way, and I ended up really liking it. So I stuck with it, and I just got my master's degree from Carnegie Mellon last year. And so I have been primarily classically trained. I took maybe one improv workshop at the Crowden Center in Berkeley, California, one summer. It lasted for 2 weeks, and I was scared out of my mind for it. I was like, what do you mean we don't have music to read off of? So, but it was a very pivotal point in my musical career, knowing that we have these instruments that we can make these great sounds off of. And it's, I honestly think my technique is better when I'm not worrying about reading notes and reading correct phrasing and things. Like it's a certain, it takes certain creativity and bringing that out from myself and teaching it in other people is certainly a treat.
Do you think the wiring and discipline established by the classical training you've had is essential? In other words, are you overlaying your new techniques atop that? Is it important to have that underneath?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, we're told forever in our studies that at least for string players, we should be playing with a straight bow and everything, and so that we have that proper control over our instrument. Then when you get to newer music, composers want to experiment with the different sounding, like playing close to the fingerboard or playing close to the bridge to get a raspy sound. And that control would not be possible without drilling open strings for the first 3 years of your study, and etudes and things. Like the music we played today definitely took planning out, certainly. Like it's not just random noise. Like it is patterns in your fingers and your bowing and how to get from one place to the other.
We'll come back to Bronwyn in a moment to talk a little bit about how she played. Are you going to stay in Pittsburgh, I hope?
Yeah.
Good. Okay,
for
we
the
have
foreseeable
it.
Future.
Okay, we've got it. We have a commitment. you said it on the radio. So.
Okay. All right.
It's San Francisco's loss. Let's turn to Allison, who is the clarinet player today. Tell us a little bit about you.
Sure. So I moved around a little bit when I was growing up, but I'd lived in New Mexico for a while. That's where my dad's from, and I lived in central Pennsylvania for a while because that's where my mom's from. And I started playing on piano just because there was a piano in the house, and I was very enticed by that. But I also played clarinet in band growing up, and I never took it super seriously then, but I really enjoyed the community of playing with other people, which is still something that, you know, even in today when I spend most of my musical time playing by myself and rehearsing, you know, it's all for that playing with other people and putting on music together and making music for the community. That's still what matters the most to me. So that's sort of what got me started and interested in music. And whenever I went to school, I didn't initially intend to study music, but I realized there was a big part missing from my life. And so I switched over after a few years. I didn't really get started in contemporary music until I moved to Pittsburgh to come study at Carnegie CU Mellon to get my master's degree. And I worked a lot with the composition studio, partly I think just because I wanted to do everything and I hadn't had a composition studio at my undergrad. I went to a much smaller school that didn't have that department. And I really enjoy getting to work one-on-one with all the composers. There was particularly one composer that I got along with very well, and he ended up writing a solo for me. And it was like a whole process because he based it on a story from a show that he really liked. So we watched the entire show together so that I could get that context and watch the episode together that this was based off of, you know, this story. And what was really cool about that process was, again, the collaboration that he was writing this piece for me and I would play something and go, did you mean to do this or this? Or like, actually, this sound might even work better for what you're looking for. So I got to have a little bit of say in that, which was very cool to me. And I was pretty hooked from that point on.
Again, it's kind of analogous, as I mentioned, the trail blazing before. This is like acting in a play where the author of the play is there and can give you notes, you can give him notes or her, mm-hmm. and figure out what to do together. It's very collaborative, it sounds like. And I never thought about that before, that it almost always contemporary music, it will be collaborative, it sounds like, not only among the musicians, but with the composer. Now, you said something that really struck me. What was your first major?
Biology.
And then you decided to switch or double or
what? I switched.
Now that's, I would think it's often, most often the other way around, that people want to study music and they realize that how hard it is mm-hmm. for one, or how they're playing, which might have been fine in high school.
Right.
Suddenly you're in the midst of elite musicians. So mm-hmm. that's something to be able to switch.
It was, I think, one good thing that really came out of it is I really knew that's what I wanted to do, because I did do biology for 2 years and I'm a good student. You know, I did my homework and studied and I did fine. I wasn't the best, but my heart really wasn't in it. It was all a chore. So by the time I had done that for 2 years and then switched over and got to take, you know, as a junior freshman level theory and history and all and ear training and all of that, I was just so in love with doing it that I really like poured my heart and soul into it. And I knew, because I had already tried the other path at least for a little bit, that was really where I wanted to go.
There was a 12-year-old sitting right in front of that blue microphone this morning. You may not have heard him, but he plays trombone, ukulele, piano, he beatboxes, and I think I'm missing an instrument, but it's clear music is his passion, mm-hmm. and I was amazed at the range of instruments he played, and his beatboxing skills, which he demonstrated, were were remarkable. Zoe Sorella's here, too, and your background, you're Carnegie Mellon also, right?
For my master's degree, yes.
Yeah, and where did you grow up?
I grew up in 2 countries in 8 states, so it's a hard question to answer. I'm a citizen of the world. I moved around a lot, which was fortunate because I got to meet lots of different types of people and work with lots of incredible music teachers all over the place. And I was exposed to different styles of teaching and different styles of playing very early on. I started piano when I was 4, and I told everybody who would listen from the age of 4 that I was going to be a musician when I grew up, and I haven't changed my mind yet. So,
were you born in the U.S. or abroad?
I was born in the U.S. I'm a dual English and American citizen, and so again, fortunate to get to experience also an English tradition of music education as well.
Yeah. Now you're really an entrepreneurial, all of you are, but I mean, you're the founder and executive director, I think, right?
Allison is our executive director. Oh, I'm our artistic director.
I beg your pardon. and Bron, when you're important too.
Oh, okay.
But seriously, is a relatively small nonprofit in a particular niche, that's a real remarkable thing for both of you to be doing, creating the music as well as trying to make sure that you carve out a sustainable way of doing what it is you're doing so that others will have the ability to keep listening and playing. How's it going, do you think? From my perspective, you're doing great, but it's a lot of hard work.
It's absolutely a lot of hard work, and it's been a whirlwind 3 years. We've been incredibly fortunate that Pittsburgh is such a rich infrastructure for creating new art. There's a history of startups in Pittsburgh, and it's been mostly in the tech sector historically, right? There's been so many people who are able to come in and create a new app or create a new business in the tech sector. And I think that laid the ground for sort of the beautiful arts and culture movement going on in the city right now, is Pittsburgh is used to new things. They're used to supporting their own. I mean, look at the Steelers, the Pirates, and the Pens fans, right? Pittsburgh supports its own. And we've been lucky to have been sort of invited into that fold as well, where Pittsburgh really has said, you know, oh, your name sounds like Nat. That's cool. That makes us smile. So we will support you, right? And we've been really welcomed with open arms by the community. Lucky to have had residencies at St. Paul's Episcopal Church, at Carnegie Mellon University, to have worked with Point Park University, the University of Pittsburgh, and just had wonderful collaborations with Pittsburgh venues and artists and businesses.
Yeah, I think you've removed a lot of barriers. People, I think sometimes walls go up if they're not familiar with classical music instruments or the genre of contemporary classical music. Nat 28, as you said, is a great way to do it. 28 is the number of bridges within the city proper. How about from your perspective, Allison, in terms of getting the organization going?
Yeah, I mean, as Zoe said, it's been a lot of work, and we've had to kind of jump in and do a lot of things that maybe we didn't necessarily feel ready for, and that's part of it. If we wait around until we feel ready, we're probably never going to do anything. So I know Zoe got us in contact with someone at Chamber Music Pittsburgh, and we did a gig with them our first year, and that was, like, such a crazy time. Like, we were, you know, all scrambling to, like, put together a compelling program in a month, and you know, we did it, and it was fantastic, but it was a lot of work for sure. And we've definitely been, you know, we're all musicians, and that's what we are first and foremost. And so sometimes the administrative stuff we kind of have to learn along the way. As you mentioned, you know, we have Zoe, who's artistic director, I'm executive director, and we also have another member, Brian Gilling, who serves as our music director. And those all might sound like they're the same job, and sometimes we kind of do have to help each other out with our jobs. But we've been figuring out, you know, the best way to delegate all of the different tasks and, you know, not overload anyone's plate and keep things running. But we're definitely learning, and I think we're getting better at it. And those are skills that are going to help us in literally everything we do.
You bet. And I'm surprised that it's been only 3 years.
Me too.
It
seems like
because I know we had you on soon after the group was founded, mm-hmm. and it seems like longer ago, and that's a good thing.
It's been a busy 3 years.
Yeah, your roots are deeper. Anything you'd like to add to that, Bronwyn, just from your perspective?
I don't know. I'm just psyched to be here. I haven't been the main cellist for Nat 28, but every time I am asked to play with them, I've always learned a lot, mainly from the preparation it takes to and bravery it takes to take on the music that they do. And I really applaud everything they've done. And I hope I continue to play.
Terrific. Nat, while you're staying in
now
Pittsburgh.
Now that apparently I'm staying in Pittsburgh.
We're staying in Pittsburgh, so you've got a location. Now we get a career path for you in your R's. Nat 28 is who you're listening to. The organization, I put a picture up there, by the way, on our Facebook page and a link to their Facebook page. They have a concert coming up 1 week from tonight, June 8th, at the aforementioned St. Paul Episcopal Church. It's at 8 o'clock. Where is the church located?
It's 1066 Washington Road. It's in Mount Lebanon.
Thank you for that. So pretty easy to get to, and a good opportunity to listen. Can you describe the program?
So the program is titled In Spite of All This, which is the name of one of the pieces on the program, in fact. And, you know, originally putting together this program, the concept was to bring light to traditionally untold narratives or voices that have been traditionally marginalized or silenced for identity reasons. And so the program was constructed around a piece by Tan Dun called Elegy, Snow in June, and it's a cello concerto with an orchestra of four percussionists behind the cellist. And the piece is based on a traditional story where a woman is executed for crimes that she did not commit. And it's meant to be a memorial to victims everywhere. And so that was kind of the construction of the piece, of the concert, excuse me, and its theme. Which sounds initially like it's going to be a depressing concert, but as I've delved more into the repertoire in this concert, I've realized the message is actually a very optimistic and hopeful one. The other three pieces on the program, Missy Mazzoli's In Spite of All This, Mia Masayoka's Survival, and Katia Ghosh's
Immutable Dreams.
thank you. All three of those pieces are about terrible things that either have happened historically or are happening today in the world, but each one was constructed with optimism, with the hope that we will survive, that we will come through, that our dreams, you know, the idea of immutable dreams is that even if us ourselves, our body passes on from this existence, our dreams and the things that we desire from the world will live on within the universe. The idea of in spite of all this is that everything that's terrible going on in the world, we are carrying forward with optimism in spite of all this. And so it is an optimistic message that we're sharing.
Are there opportunities to talk after the concert about some of the concepts you're representing and the music you're presenting? Either formally or informally?
Always informally, the musicians are very available after concerts to speak. There will be a little bit of speaking before the concert about the theme or during the concert. And there will be, there might be program notes. I'm not going to make any promises yet, but there will be, whether verbally or written, we'll definitely talk about these concepts.
Yeah, it's the reason I ask, and I certainly don't want to become your artistic director from afar here, but... one thing you're doing is, I think, opening up people's minds to some of these issues. And as they listen and kind of become enchanted with what you're playing and as they think about it, they might be more eager than usual to talk about some of these issues, which is a real gift for you to be able to provide that kind of plasticity to one's mind and one's interest in trying to just understand differences in people. So you're listening to the Saturday Light Brigade, Saturday mornings on Community Radio. Thank you for doing this. We have Nat 28 along with us. So Zoe is going to lead us through, I think, some sounds of these instruments, just so you can really understand what's going on. You can just clip that right in there, Bronwyn, no worries at all. And we'll just get a sense of some of the kinds of sounds that come out of these instruments. And I'll let you sort of, you'll take the Leonard Bernstein role here, the sounds of the trio instead of the orchestra.
Sure. So, there's sort of this strange term you hear contemporary classical musicians throw around of extended techniques. And the idea is pieces that you might not hear in a Beethoven symphony, basically. And a lot of them are borrowed from Eastern music practices. A lot are borrowed from native music practices. And it's just an idea of taking the musical language of an instrument and seeing how far you can expand it, seeing what new sounds you can find. And so... for example, I am a flutist, and one of my favorite things to do on the flute that a lot of today's composers are experimenting with is to play the flute like a percussion instrument. And so, for example, I can use my tongue to make sounds like that, which is almost like a beatbox-esque sound. I can slap the keys of my instrument and make what's called a key slap, appropriately enough. And you have all these percussive sounds like that. I can use the beatbox language to create things like that, which is not only derivative of beatbox, but also of shakuhachi traditions of playing. And then you can start to incorporate, it is a wind instrument, and we spend so much of our traditional upbringing trying to get the wind out of our sound so all you hear is a beautiful sound. But when you let that air sound actually come through the instrument, you can get some beautiful effects.
Okay, that's all the keys are closed on that. Mm-hmm. So you're blowing over the mouthpiece?
So the first sound, I'm using my teeth to create resistance. So it's just like saying shh to tell somebody to be quiet, basically, but with the resonance of the instrument.
Okay.
The second sound that I made, I'm covering up the embouchure hole, the hole through that you would usually blow over, so that you allow the air to travel all the way through the tube.
Wow, the percussive sounds were, I noticed when you were playing the piece that you played, were really cool to listen to. Do you ever, like, suck on the mouth part? Does anything happen if you do
can.
That?
It's very, very, very indistinct. You kind of get, so sometimes people will use that to get sort of a breathing or a, you know, amplified breathing is basically what it is. So when you start to use these sounds with your mouth, the flute is just acting as an amplifier, an amplifying tube. And so you do hear the inhalation sound. You can't manipulate it too much.
Gosh, it's so interesting to to think. And the term is contemporary music rather than new music. Are they interchangeable?
They're interchangeable, really. I think contemporary music is an academic, like, starts in 1920. New music is probably later, and it's more of a colloquial term.
Yeah, it's kind of like modern. Is it a period of time, or is it just modern? Do you want to make one of these two women do some tricks? or you could ask them, or they could just demonstrate whatever's easiest.
I can show some things.
Okay.
So
Allison is going to show off.
We were just talking about this a little bit. So I, you know, this isn't my only job. I have a few other jobs that I do. And one of them is I work at a music store, and something that we do is we help out a lot of kids that are first trying to play an instrument and deciding what they want to play in band. And I was realizing a lot of the sounds I make are sounds that they get whenever they're first trying to play the instrument. So it's sort of like what Brahma was saying, that you do have to have that control to, you know, be able to get that sound or not get that sound. But there are some sounds that actually are sort of hard to make whenever you are used to playing with this proper embouchure for 10 or 15 years, and then you have to, you know, mess with it to get the correct multiphonic. But this is something that you'll see a lot, and I think you'll see it a lot with flute too, is multiphonics, which is one of my favorite extended techniques on clarinet. So it's just literally how it sounds. I'm producing more than one pitch at a time. And there's a couple different ways that you can do this. There are just some fingerings that if you just like press your fingers down over and cover certain holes and open certain keys that the instrument isn't meant to necessarily do, then you can get some cool sounds like that. But it is, you do kind of have to control it with your embouchure a little bit to, you know, get them all to ring at the same time.
And can you get it by blowing way too hard?
A little bit, yeah. That's like there's, you know, something like that. That you can just kind of get different registers at the same time. Some of them you have to actually blow a little bit softer to get them to come out, and some of them you have to blow hard to get, you know, they're all kind of different. And that's a really fun thing that I like to mess with, of course.
Are there percussive techniques as well?
Yeah, there are. I don't think that they end up being quite as loud as they are in the flute. The flute is an excellent amplifier for that, and saxophone as well, too. Like, the key clicks on saxophone can be really nice and loud. But I can do sort of like a tongue slap like she does. Like, you know, that sort of thing. Again, composers love to use that, and sometimes a struggle is that they'll write it in a 2D section where everybody's playing. You can't really hear that. So that's something, too, that we talk to composers a lot about. Like, this is a really great sound. We want people to be able to hear it. Please don't write for 20 other people to be playing at the same time.
That's interesting. That's good feedback. Good for a composer to know.
But that's kind of a fun thing. There are other ways to do multiple pitches at once. You can hum and play. So... So you kind of get beats, you know, that are going depending on how far apart the pitches are. I'm trying to think of, and we do give a lot of air sounds as well, you know, where you're just using the instrument as an amplifier. Glisses are kind of a fun thing, like that sort of thing. Exactly. And that's what we were talking again about, this idea of extended techniques kind of over time. I think they become part of the expectation of technique and canon of the instrument. And we're blazing the trail of deciding which ones are really worth keeping around, you know?
I would imagine some of this music cannot be transcribed with traditional methods.
Yes.
Am I right about that?
Yes, and that's what I know. I don't know if you have that piece of paper with you. We're on the radio anyway. Oh, but there's a lot of times there is a key that composers will make at the beginning of the piece that say, okay, here's all of the sounds that you might not necessarily see notated usually, and here's how I have decided to notate them. So you'll sort of have this, like, legend to the map, you know, that
very
you
cool.
go, okay, so I have, like, a triangle note head here. What does that mean again? You know, and you learn it. You know, it's all shorthand to just help you remember because you've practiced it and sort of semi-memorized it.
This sounds like a lot of fun for if you have the right kind of attitude towards music. A lot of fun, certainly for anybody to listen to, I think, but to play. Bronwyn, were you using a straight bow the whole time, or?
This is a normal bow that I use. I did use the different parts of the bow that not like Western traditional music uses, and it's called col legno, which is using the wood of your bow.
Huh.
And so a lot that was found a lot throughout this piece. If you were listening earlier, that I combined the glissando, which Allison just mentioned, you know, sliding, with the wood of the bow instead of the horsehair to get a kind of like a raindrop effect a little bit. So that's something that's really cool and percussive about
now,
the cello.
When you're using the wood part of the bow, and I can't see you perfectly, but that's good because our listeners are in the same beat. Are you bowing or are you striking? Or is it a little bit of both?
Yeah, it's more like bouncing lightly the wood of the bow. So you do have to turn it not upside down, but just sideways. So sometimes when even composers as far back as like Prokofiev used this col legno technique and just to get like that extra percussive type of thing if you don't have drums handy.
that's really fun.
Yeah. Another thing I think that a lot of people definitely notice is the Bartok pits, and it's called that, or a snap pits, and the composer Béla Bartok used it a lot in his music, and it's where you pull the string with your finger instead of the bow so that it kind of springboards off of the fingerboard to make a really percussive sound. And I know whenever I would practice that in a piece back home, my mom would think I was breaking my instrument and told me to stop. So, obviously with any technique, there is a wrong way to do it and it could be harmful to your instrument. And that's why having that knowledge beforehand is very crucial. But it's definitely a very alarming way to make your presence known in a piece, and that happened a couple times in this piece. I'm trying to think if there's any other extended techniques. Yeah, one more. At the very opening, we started out non-vibrato, and this isn't just for string players. This can be for any instrument that tends to use vibrato. So I started out indicated no vibrato. And then I had a wiggly line over it to slowly indicate to add a little wiggle.
I noticed that at the beginning.
And then it gets wider and wider. And then eventually back to the straight tone.
Yeah, I liked how it kind of sucked you in. It almost sounded like you were tuning at the beginning, like mm-hmm. an orchestra.
Yeah.
And then this cacophony came. We're out of time. Sure. I can't believe it. So the concert is June 8th. And what's Nat28's website?
www.nat28.org.
Okay, thank you for being here.